Design You Podcast, Episode 40. If you are stressed, stretched, and stuck, and ready to take your life to the next level, reach out to me for a free 30-minute strategy call to see what steps you can implement right now to design your best life. Email me at connect@tinamurray.com and let's create your own unique blueprint to lay the foundations for that life that you really want. Are you ready to create the life you really want? Welcome to the Design You Podcast, where I talk to everyday people who know life can be done differently with a clear mindset, positive attitude, openness to growth, and their willingness to take life to the next level. Get ready to design you. Hi guys, Tina Murray here. Today I'm welcoming to the drawing board Dave Edelstein. Dave is the mind behind Better Than Before, the website of mindful communication. He has had a varied career as a soil scientist, environmental protection specialist, a teacher, and community development worker. While in the Galapagos Islands, a surprise heart attack changed the course of his life. The turn to mindful communication came as Dave began to offer health and wellness coaching to people online. He learned that many of us struggle to communicate with the most important people in our lives. Join me as I chat with Dave about being better than before. Hi, David. Welcome to the Design You Podcast.
Hi, Tina. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. Now tell me, what was this life-changing event that changed the whole course of your life?
Well, I would say that there's probably been more than one. The most recent one was a health event. I was surprised at 58 years old to have had a heart attack working in the Galapagos Islands. So there is the dramatic location element. Mm. And it really made me think, you know, 58 is not an advanced age to have a heart attack. And it was a big surprise because when I was a young person, I was a marathon runner, you know, the 26 mile marathons. A good part of my life, I was a vegetarian. I've always been thoughtful about my health. Even when I was no longer a marathon runner, I can continue to exercise regularly. Mm-hmm. So it really made me think very seriously about how I was living my life and what I was doing with it. And particularly the way that I lived my emotional life. Yeah, there was all that to it.
Mm. So it sounds to me like you were already conscious about your health. And most of us who are conscious of our health think we're going to be fine. Those big things aren't going to happen to us. So I also imagine on top of that, as you said, the dramatic location being isolated puts a whole other perspective to, oh, wow, this is really real. Tell us more about that, because I think a lot of us are in a little bit of a bubble where we think, yep, our life's going to be fine because we're taking control of it. And we don't always.
Yes, well, it was almost too exciting. I had woken up morning ready for work and had gone out and gotten some exercise as I generally do. And I came home and while I was making breakfast, I had a major heart attack. Mm. I was not on one of the most developed islands in the Galapagos. I was on an island that is populated, but less developed, the large island, Isla Isabela. And there's no hospital there. There's a health center. And I did receive first aid there. They airlifted me to San Cristobal Island, which is sort of the bureaucratic center of the Galapagos Islands. Mm-hmm. And then I had to wait almost 4 days for another plane to airlift me to Guayaquil, Ecuador, on the coast. It's Ecuador's most populous city. And I just had to wait. I couldn't take a commercial flight because I couldn't go at that altitude. Wow. I just for a small two-engine plane to carry me at a low altitude over the ocean. Mm. And then Ecuador took wonderful care of me. I'm married to an Ecuadorian, so I think that made a difference in how this was handled.
Okay.
they took me to a public hospital. They kept me there for a week. I received marvelous attention. They installed a stent in one of my coronary arteries, a surgeon from Argentina. Mm-hmm. My cardiologist was born in Russia. he and I had in common that we were married to Ecuadorians. So it was very exciting, multicultural experience in a lot of ways. The initial moments were frightening. I knew how far I was from real help, mm-hmm. but I received marvelous care all along. And again, because I'm married to an Ecuadorian, I was charged nothing. As a U.S. citizen, to be charged nothing for a health event, stunning. I was flabbergasted that I'm not an Ecuadorian citizen. I'm a resident and married to an Ecuadorian citizen, and they took care of me like one of their own. So, and the care was excellent. I couldn't possibly have done better anywhere else. So, yeah, yes, you know, much praise and gratitude for the Ecuadorian government, the way they handled me.
And those 4 days to have to wait, and I know you had no choice in that, and you know you had no choice. Again, it shows how life sometimes throws us things and we can't choose. We keep on thinking, oh my God, we can do whatever we want, but sometimes we just have to stop and wait. And obviously that's a time to be reaching out to people and doing whatever it is that you needed to do over that time to make you feel comfortable as well. But it must be scary for your family. Was your wife with you, or is she in Ecuador?
Yes. At the time? My wife was with me. We were working together in the Galapagos. That we were fortunate in that. It doesn't always work out that way. The Galapagos is a very unusual environment, as everyone knows. And part of the waiting was that it wasn't even possible to hire a plane to come get me.
Wow.
Because it wasn't properly quarantined. So you know, these are the Galapagos Islands. Mm-hmm. They're an international treasure. You can't just bring in anything.
Sure.
This perhaps is not, you know, the time to go into ecological issues that confront the Galapagos. Invasive species are a big one. Any seed, any germ, any biological, anything that could be plane and could be accidentally dropped when it landed could have far-reaching effects. And so I had to wait. I'm a very committed environmental conservationist. I worked for the United States Environmental Protection Agency. I worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I was a biology teacher in a high school in New York. I'm very committed to the larger picture. This, in that sense, this was not about me. This was about the Galapagos Islands. And I was prepared to wait it out in that regard. Also, in the condition that I was in, you know, I seemed to really, really, really lose all meaning. I sort of drifted along without any real awareness of time passing. You know, I was on a variety of medications, and it was, I think, much more frightening for my wife than it was for me. Mm. I felt like, well, you know, the pain has stopped. You know, by later on the first day, the pain has stopped. I'll just hang out until things blow over. There was another odd incident on the night of the second day that I think was pretty scary to look at. It wasn't fun to go through, but it didn't seem like the end to me. But I think on the outside, it kind of looked like it was.
Okay.
So yes, you know, for my family and my, you know, the rest of my own family lives in the United States. So they were very far away. The information they could get was limited. My daughter speaks Spanish well, but the rest of the family, not as well. My wife does not speak English. Okay. So there was a lot of concern about how to communicate things. Thank you, Google Translate. There was a lot of concern about how to communicate things. you know, what would happen and when it would happen. The waiting for them seemed very long.
Yes,
you know, the
of
days.
Course.
And in fact, there was a funny moment when I did finally get to Guayaquil. The doctors are, you know, surround me, and the head cardiologist is looking at me, and all of a sudden he says to the assembled group, "Isn't this the emergency from Monday?"
Oh.
Says, "It's Thursday night. What happened?" You know, it was a chain of odd circumstances. There's normally a plane that's dedicated to the Galapagos, airlifting from the Galapagos.
Okay.
It was repairs.
Oh, you're kidding me.
That was it. It was in free pairs. There's a need for another plane to come from the mainland. Those mainland planes are dedicated to other things.
Yeah.
They're dedicated to medical emergencies within continental Ecuador.
Mm.
It was a big deal to get a plane out to me and bring me in.
Mm.
Again, you know, much gratitude that they did it. It was, I was not first on the list. I was not, you know, an Ecuadorian national priority, but they did take care of me.
Yeah. And you're here to tell the story, which is amazing.
I'm glad to be able to tell it, you know.
And it's changed your direction in life. So tell us more about where you've gone to from there.
Well, you know, it has, for a variety of reasons. You know, I always, as most people do, assumed basic good health. You know, that I came to Ecuador 6.5 years ago. I had cardiologist appointments in the United States, but nobody felt that I was near to any emergency. And I lived in a rural village in central Ecuador, and it's very mountainous. It's the Andes, you know, one of the world's mountain chains, and it really is great. Ecuador has spectacular scenery.
Okay.
I lived in a little village of 350 people, and I walked up and down the mountains, and I went here and there, and I taught English to the school children, a little three-room school for seven grades of a total of 55 children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did that for 2 years happily. No real concerns there. And, you know, I met my wife and I moved to Cuenca, which is Ecuador's third largest city. And, you know, I assumed that, you know, things would just continue to be this way, and that I and we would have a life where I would kind of go from place to place doing things like teaching English in rural schools and, you know, working as a conservationist in the Galapagos and, you know, perhaps other countries and other environments and other places. I had applied to work in Colombia and Panama as a next step.
Mm-hmm.
Amazonian Ecuador was another possibility. And then this. And now I need regular cardiologist appointments. I need to be near enough to a large enough city to get to those mm-hmm. appointments. Part of my heart does not beat. The basic assumption of doing whatever and doing it in whatever location, regardless of remoteness, mm-hmm. That's a closed question. That's not possible. The adventure I had undertaken in coming to Ecuador, in a certain sense, was now over. You know, unexpectedly over. That I could not live that lifestyle safely. No one would hire me to live that lifestyle because it can't be done safely.
Yeah.
So I had to really rethink things. I also had to think very seriously about why I had had a heart attack. My physical issues were basically, I wouldn't say non-existent. I have something that, you know, people should be aware of, which is that some people produce large amounts of cholesterol regardless of their diet.
Okay.
a person like this. One of my three brothers is also a person like this. It's a genetic thing. It's not usually controllable by anything other than medication.
And can you be tested for it?
Pardon me?
Can you be tested for that?
Yes, you can. I mean, if you go for blood testing of your lipids, of your cholesterol levels, and so on, which people should do on a regular basis, probably more regularly than I had. They will, and you know what your diet is. I mean, the first thing that doctors will probably recommend if your numbers are high is that you think seriously about, what you're eating. Mm. But in my case, I went through a period where I couldn't drink milk or consume any dairy products. So, at a certain time that did lower my numbers. And then they came back up again. And regardless of what my diet looked like, regardless of my exercise program, my numbers were always high.
Okay.
And I don't know what percentage of the population has this, but it's not small. It wouldn't be unusual for a person to find that this was true. So, my numbers were elevated, but not stratospheric. We're not talking about huge numbers. My emotional life was not what it should have been. The way I dealt with emotional things, anger, fear, especially stress, that I would stress very, very high. But usually not deal with the stressors, that I will allow fear to hold me back, that I, it's a myth that if you become angry, you must explode into anger. The way we do anger is learned. This is something that I have learned since. Do anger is learned. Everybody gets angry.
Sure.
But how we process that and how we express it is learned. Usually as children from our parents, we see how our parents do anger. I wouldn't want people to think that I had really disturbed parents. I had actually very, very good parents. My father, though, could on occasion be very explosive. And I, being, the first of four male children, learned to be angry in the way that dad was angry. Mm-hmm. And it is not an effective way to be angry. And because of that, very often, because I had not really learned properly to do anger in a different way, in a wiser, more thoughtful way, all I wound up doing was repressing what I knew was antisocial anger. And that was very dangerous. Because anger, when it's repressed in that not constructive way, makes your blood clot faster.
Right.
Side effect of repressed anger is more rapid blood coagulation. And if your heart situation, your blood situation, your cholesterol situation is imperfect, a blood clot in a coronary artery, that's what a heart attack is.
Yeah.
So I never imagined, I was like, well, I'm physically very strong. And it was true when the doctors examined me, they say, oh, your heart muscle is very, very strong. Unfortunately, your arteries are not as clear as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the training and exercise I had done were helpful and allowed me to recover quite fully. I'm back to going to the gym every day, but now I don't actually go to the gym every day. I go to the gym 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. I go to Tai Chi 3 days a week because I have, since the heart attack, a very different appreciation of the mind-body connection and what wellness and living well really means.
Mm. So literally you're saying that when we are bottling up our anger, we're actually bottling up all of our arteries.
We are. Yeah. There are a number of very, very serious physical symptoms to anger.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about this in a blog entry a couple of months ago. The hormonal release involved triggers a whole chain of events that, you know, things that are pretty obvious when you think about it, that raise our blood pressure, that tense our muscles, mm-hmm. that interfere with our breathing, that increase our clotting factors, that increase our heart rate. It really is like you're on turbo all the time. It's different. You know, not all stressors make us angry. Some stressors make us afraid. Stress is not good for us. But the whole picture is not identical necessarily with anger-inducing stress.
Sure.
You know, particularly that thing of blood clotting. Yes, being angry that way. Yeah, you know, you're just a pressure cooker. You literally are just waiting to explode.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important the way we process anger. And again, this became a whole, not just one, but a series of articles that I wrote. We really need to address it with mindfulness. You know, in this, the Tai Chi is very helpful to me, but I've also specifically studied mindfulness as a process since the heart attack. These were things that I knew about. I had heard the word mindfulness. I was interested in it. I had heard of Tai Chi. I was interested in it, but I didn't take the step to make it part of my life. It's like, well, you know, it's a thing and sounds like it would be good for me, but why rush? I'll do something else. You know, it seems more interesting to do this thing right now. And you lose sight of that mental foundation.
Mm.
I certainly did. I shouldn't say you lose sight. I lost sight. I will speak from the eye, as I like to say in my work and in my writing. I will speak from the eye. I lost sight of how my mind was processing information, how my mind was processing interactions, how my mind was reacting emotionally to the events of my life. And this was, looking back on it, this was a profound mistake. It's very important to not be blown about by one's emotions like a leaf in a hurricane.
Sure.
You know, again, you know, I thought I kind of had this under control because I'm a bright person. You know, I'm a person who has a good level of intellectual achievement. I went to Harvard University and graduated. I have that stamp of you're a smart person approval on me. But there's lots of ways to be smart. I wasn't especially emotionally intelligent. I wouldn't make great claims for my emotional intelligence yet. I'm very empathetic, but I'm not necessarily emotionally intelligent in my own reactions to events. I'm working on it. This is part of being mindful. This is the great thing about mindfulness. You suddenly become empowered to say, oh, I'm slipping into an unhelpful, negative, unworthy emotional state. I can feel this, it's not bad or wrong to feel this, but I don't have to do what I would have done in the past. It's not that I will never get angry again. Of course I will. It's normal. It's human to experience anger. But I'm going to express this in a constructive, positive way. I will neither totally lose control of myself and start screaming, nor will I repress this when I wish that I were screaming. That's a solution. that's just not a solution.
So there's an honoring yourself in that. It's about honoring what your emotions are, accepting that you have them, and then finding a way to communicate them, which honors you and also respects the people that are around you.
Exactly. That's a really good expression of this. It's like, how can I do this as well as I can do this instead of as badly as I can do it? So getting into this and going this route was a big change for me. And in the past year and a half since that life-changing event, people say to me, wow, your reaction to things, the way you talk about life is just so different from what it was. Mm-hmm. I'll hear occasionally from former students. I was a high school science teacher for 13 years in New York. And I'll hear from four, it's just like, you're so far afield from what I remember. You're still you. I see that you, but you've traveled such a long distance. Even from the way, yes, you were the adult in the classroom, but even the way you used to behave in the classroom and the way we interacted, you're so far away from that.
Isn't that interesting? Because that picks up also on, our own expectations. If people are used to you behaving a certain way, you almost have to retrain them as you retrain yourself about their response to you. Because if they're waiting for the usual, oh, he's about to explode, I've got to brace myself for it, the first few times they're going to do that, and probably for quite a while they're going to be waiting, okay, when's the explosion coming, when's the explosion? So it's you actually have to communicate with them about how you are doing this differently so that they can relax too.
Yeah, it's true. It's certainly changed. The person who deals with me every day is my wife. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly changed our interaction. It's not that in the last year and a half I've never lost my temper, but it's rare. Mm-hmm. And most of the time I can detach myself from this and manage things better. And it's really been a tremendous aid to our relationship. Me being more adult in this sense, it also allows her to be more adult in this sense. Culturally in Ecuador, there's a lot of emotional acting out between spouses. It's not always a bad thing. I mean, there's a lot of good expression in that. I wouldn't want to say this in a way that seemed to be judging it. It's just different from the United States. People are just more emotionally expressive in marriage than it is typical of what I ever observed in the U.S.
Sure.
But by me being occasionally a little bit more adult, it also allows her to express and interact in a more communicative as opposed to expressive way. When we're in the grip of strong emotion, we get very expressive. We have to say a lot of things.
Sure.
But, the learning process the last year and a half, there's a great need especially in spousal communication and marital communication, relationship communication, for more listening. Mm. So yes, you know, if I stay more on a maturity track, on an adult track, she can also do more authentic speaking and positive listening so that we just communicate better. I can say that this is really the best relationship I've ever had in that way, that we just communicate better. And it's funny because we're communicating in my second language.
True.
In Spanish. And it's the best communication I've ever had. I never communicated this well with a partner in English.
But when people listen to us, we actually feel like we're heard, and which means we feel that we can trust more, to open up more. So there's going to definitely be depths in that. It easier said than done, I know, but it makes perfect sense when you're allowing that space for each of you to listen, to be respected and heard.
It's so important. I do a certain amount of relationship coaching now. This is what I've gotten into as a result of the Turning Point experience. It's like, you know, what do I value most in life, and what do I want to help other people experience in an optimal way? And for me, it's human connection, friendship, my marriage, my family relationships, my children, my mother, my brothers. All of these relationships have their unique qualities. They have category qualities. My relationship with my children, you know, it's a sort of a category thing, but each of my children is extremely different from the other. So, you know, there's that, you know, my brothers, I have three brothers, each, you know, it's a category relationship, you know, it's a generational relationship that I have with the three of them, but it's also each of them individually. You know, my mother, God bless her, 85 years old, you know, my relationship with her has also, you know, has also, my relationship with all of these people has changed over the last year.
And the thing is, if you're seeing them more because you're sitting back and actually taking time to listen to them, the depth of your communication, that even just, I imagine you're seeing more in them and going, oh my gosh, I actually never really noticed them about that, but there's something about that that's really cool, or maybe it's not so cool, whatever. Yeah.
Well, there's also, you know, people talk a lot about gratitude. You know, I'm grateful to have ever heard them again. I realize how close I was to the last conversation that I'd had with them being the last ever.
True.
Shortly after my heart attack, I did lose a cousin to a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, sort of that stunned realization that, oh my goodness, I never imagined that the last conversation I had with him would be, in fact, the final one, the last one. There is for me a much stronger appreciation of the people who have accompanied me in my life, who've given it depth, who've given it quality and color. Where would I be without them? And that was, you know, the real motivating thought and experience of this was how fortunate, you know, my wife literally saved my life, getting me to the health center, you know, maneuvering me through the hospital system, you know, speaking to people, you know, making sure that I was cared for. She literally saved my life.
Yeah.
You know, the expressions of concern and support with my family, you know, once I was out of the hospital, you know, and could speak to them again. And, you know, so, you know, I've gotten into specifically, you know, yes, it's life coaching, but my specific focus is relationship coaching. A lot of life coaching focuses, as in a, as it should, on individual development and becoming the best person we can be. I work that in relation to that part of becoming the best person that we can be is connecting to other people, that we do it in a vacuum. You can't become your best alone.
Yes.
You can't become your best in isolation.
Yeah.
In marriages, you know, this is the point, the experience of deep love, of being in a marriage where you really love somebody, is that you're constantly growing.
For sure.
You know, your spouse, if your relationship is functioning properly, your spouse is your life coach. You're coaching each other. You're making this happen.
Yes.
You're you know, sometimes, you know, it's tough love. You know, you're trying to bring out best, most loving, serving, giving, altruistic, agape version of the other person. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's for. I had a marvelous conversation with a young couple yesterday. You know, and they have a new baby and they were having some tough times, and there was tension around sharing and distribution of household chores. And, you know, I was able to, you know, the bulk of our conversation was love is expressed through washing the dishes.
Yes. Sure is. Nothing sexier than that.
There's nothing sexier than that. Especially at this time, the new baby in the house. You know, new baby in the house, love is expressed through washing dishes. Love is expressed through doing the laundry. You know, when you, you know, and if you didn't see these kind of behaviors in your home, you know, you're starting a new generation. Your child will see you, both of you pitching in with enthusiasm that draws you together, much as you dislike the tasks, you do it because you love each other.
Yeah.
And this is how each of you will know that you love each other.
Yeah.
By mountain of labor that, I mean, if the baby's 24/7, that's 168 hours.
Yep.
It's easily 30, 40 hours of housework. It's 200 hours. And if you, you know, and if one of you is working outside the home while the baby is still so young, that's another 50 hours. But that work outside the home, that's 50 out of 250 hours. It's only 20%. You got to come home and do another 70 hours, you know, because the baby's 24/7. It's, you know.
I don't know if you need to use those number of hours. I don't know if it's going to bring anyone home.
Maybe it's my nod toward zero population growth.
This is the environmentalist in you coming out.
Yes, exactly.
So where can people get in touch with you?
The best way for people to get in touch with me, well, there's two easy ways. One is Facebook. I'm David M. Edelstein on Facebook. And I'm happy to have people contact me personally there. Another great way to reach me is write to me at, email me at dave@betterthanbefore.com. Before, in that phrase, is spelled B-E number four. So betterthanbefore.com. And yeah, I guess it really does reflect the Turning Point experience.
Absolutely.
I came up with that name after. And the process is about evolving, growing, and relating better and connecting better and being more present for other people, and experiencing what that means in your own life. So yeah, dave@betterthanbefore.com or David M. Edelstein, E-D-E-L-S-T-E-I-N, at Facebook.
Perfect. David, in one sentence or two, what could you sum up as a message for the world about how to live a better life?
Let me make a quote here. There's something I do like to quote as often as I can. In the book Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, the first section is the text 101 Zen Stones. And in number 28, it tells the story of a pupil seeking enlightenment. And the instructor says, "Why are you looking outside for enlightenment?" And in that moment, the student is enlightened because the message of this particular koan is reveal the great treasure inside you.
Wow.
Each of us has a great treasure inside of ourselves. Everyone does. Reveal that. Don't waste time on anything else. Let it out. Reveal the great treasure inside you. It's there. You don't have to learn how to do this. All you have to do is show it.
Mm. Beautiful way to end. Thank you so much, David. Enjoyed our chat today. And keep staying well and keep on connecting with people.
Well, thank you so much, Tina. It's been such a pleasure. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you.
A huge shout out to you for being here, for listening in, and being ready to step up to the drawing board. I honour your spirit and your openness to growth. If you have a mate who you think will benefit from hearing today's message, please share this episode with them. Another great way you can support us is to subscribe or to leave a 5-star review in iTunes. These reviews really do assist us to raise the visibility of the Design U podcast and helps us to reach design U-ers from all walks of life. I really do appreciate the time it takes for you to do that. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Design U podcast. You'll find the show notes over at tinamurray.com. Can't wait to see what you create as you design it, communicate it, and live it.